This is what really happens when she leaves you. She probably called it growth or finding herself, but let's call it what it actually is, a desperate sprint away from stability. She didn't step into a new world. She simply cut the rope that held her safe, mistaking the vertigo of falling for the thrill of flying. Right now, she feels the rush, but gravity is inevitable. This isn't a story about her victory. It is a forensic report on her collapse. You think you lost her, but she is the one who just walked into a desert without a map, and the mirage is about to fade. She defines freedom as the absence of us, but she fails to understand that autonomy without connection is just isolation with a better marketing team. She didn't escape a prison. She evicted herself from the only shelter that actually knew her name. In simpler terms, she traded the deep compound interest of a long-term partnership for the pocket change of temporary attention. She views this emptiness as a blank canvas, but soon she will see it for what it really is, a terrifying blank page that she has no idea how to fill. She is celebrating the demolition, unaware that she has nowhere left to sleep, which brings us to the manic energy of the day she left. This initiates what we call stage one. The moment the door clicked shut behind her, she didn't feel loss. She felt a surge of adrenaline, like a diver surfacing too quickly to realize the danger. This is the honeymoon phase of destruction. She looks around her new empty apartment and mistakes the echo for potential, telling herself she is finally the protagonist of a movie you were trying to cancel. It is a state of hyper-independence where she reorganizes furniture and buys new sheets, convinced that changing the scenery changes the internal reality. She feels a frantic sense of relief, believing she has successfully amputated the we to save the me. She sleeps diagonally across the bed, viewing that extra mattress space as luxury rather than the first symptom of a void. She is drunk on the novelty of answering to no one, unaware that this feeling isn't true peace, it's just the temporary stillness of holding your breath. She thinks she's rebooted the system, but she's simply running on battery power that will eventually drain. Then comes the chorus of enablers. Her friends arrive like a pit crew, servicing a car that has already driven off a cliff. They pour the wine and recite the standard script. You're glowing. He held you back. You deserve the world. This is the validation feedback loop, and it acts exactly like morphine. It masks the injury without healing it. They celebrate her bravery for quitting, framing her abandonment as an act of heroism. She feeds on this attention, posting stories of clinking glasses and forced smiles, performing happiness to prove to the algorithm that she made the right choice. But then the friends go home. The noise stops, and here is where the first glitch appears. It's late, and there is no one to check the locks or turn off the hallway light. The subtle, invisible rituals of safety are gone. She reaches for her phone to share a trivial thought, and her thumb hovers over your name before remembering she revoked her own access. That micro moment of hesitation is the first crack in the windshield of her getaway car. And to fix it, she needs a bigger audience. This frantic search for external noise ushers in stage two, the celebration. She effectively turns her existence into a public relations campaign designed to convince the world and herself that she is thriving. She fills her calendar with the aggression of a general planning a war, terrified of a single blank space where her thoughts might ambush her. This is the era of the yes girl. She accepts every invitation, attends every happy hour, and becomes a tourist in her own city, treating distraction as if it were a cure. She is running on the sugar rush of new attention, mistaking the flurry of activity for forward motion. She believes she is living her best life, but clinically speaking, she is just generating static noise to drown out the signal of her mistake. She collects phone numbers and free drinks like arcade tokens, valuing the quantity of eyes on her rather than the quality of the gaze. She is busy, yes, but she is starving, feasting on a diet of social candy that offers a momentary spike in blood sugar, but absolutely no nutritional value to her soul. But physics dictates that what goes up must come down, and the exhaustion of maintaining this character eventually sets in. There is a specific, brutal moment when she unlocks her door at 2 a.m., wipes off the makeup that feels like a mask, and the silence rushes back in like a flood. The contrast is violent. 5 minutes ago, she was the center of the party. Now, she is just a tired woman in a quiet room, realizing that the hundreds of likes on her latest photo didn't make the walk from the bathroom to the bed feel any less lonely. She starts to feel the weight of the performance. The conversations she had tonight were scripted and shallow, transactions, not connections. She begins to see that the new people in her orbit are merely audience members, not co-stars. They want the fun version of her, not the real one. She stares at the ceiling, the adrenaline fading into a dull ache, and for the first time, she realizes she is standing on center stage, bowing to an empty theater. As the adrenaline fades, she unconsciously slips into stage 3, the reality check. She re-enters the dating market expecting an upgrade, but instead, she finds herself conducting a series of exhausting job interviews for a position you had already mastered. She sits across from men who might check the boxes on paper, but in person, they feel like strangers in high definition. Every date feels like a bad rehearsal where the other actor doesn't know the lines. She finds herself explaining her allergies, her history, and her preferences over and over again, a repetitive administrative task that feels less like romance and more like manual data entry. She discovers that true intimacy isn't about the spark of the new, it is about the shorthand of the old. With you, communication was telepathic. With them, it's a clumsy translation. She laughs at their jokes, but the timing is off. She misses the luxury of silence, realizing that with these new candidates, silence is just awkwardness waiting to be filled. She is trading a rich, shared history for a shared appetizer, and the exchange rate is devastating. Simultaneously, her social safety net begins to retract. The friends who cheered for her departure are now quietly returning to their own husbands and routines, and she is slowly becoming the guest who stayed too long at the party. The novelty of her single girl era has expired, and her ongoing crisis is no longer their entertainment. It is becoming a burden. She is left scrolling through her phone, and that's when she sees it. Not a post of you suffering, but a glimpse of you stabilizing. She expected you to collapse without her management, but instead, you are building a routine that looks disturbingly peaceful. This triggers a violent inversion of jealousy. She left to find more, but she watches you finding peace, and it burns. She realizes that she didn't escape a prison. She simply walked out of a fortress that is now locking its gates for the night. She's standing on the sidewalk of her own life, watching the lights turn on in a house she voluntarily surrendered, holding a key that no longer fits the lock. This inevitably leads to stage 4. The unfair comparison. She isn't dating men anymore. She is rigorously auditing them against a memory of you that she has mentally polished into perfection. Every new interaction highlights a deficit. If a new guy is funny, she notices he isn't stable. If he is wealthy, she notices he lacks your empathy. You have become a phantom limb. She feels your presence most acutely exactly where there is now empty space. She realizes that the chemistry she missed wasn't magic. It was years of calibration that she voluntarily dismantled. She's trying to run high-performance software on incompatible hardware, and the system keeps crashing. The casual flings she thought would be liberating now feel like wearing shoes that are two sizes too small. Technically, she can walk, but every step is a painful reminder of the custom fit she discarded. She is haunted not by who you were, but by the realization that the boring consistency she fled was actually the foundation she is now desperately trying to excavate from strangers. Meanwhile, her social currency is rapidly devaluing. She finds herself stranded in a no-man's land between her married friends who discuss mortgages and school runs and the chaotic single scene she is too mature to tolerate. She becomes the anomaly at the dinner party, the cautionary tale sitting alone at the end of the table. Invitations start to dry up because her freedom makes the wives uncomfortable and the husbands wary. She has become an anachronism in her own social circle. And the cruelest cut comes when she checks on you. She expects you to be pining, but she hears through the grapevine that you aren't just surviving. You are evolving. You are fixing the house, hitting the gym, perhaps smiling at someone new. The narrative she wrote, that she was the sun and you were the planet needing her gravity, is proven false. You are orbiting just fine without her. She's standing in the VIP section of a club that closed hours ago, holding a drink she doesn't want, finally understanding that the status she fought for is just a fancy word for being left behind. The sheer weight of this cognitive dissonance triggers stage 5, the internal collapse. The energy required to maintain the illusion of thriving becomes a tax she can no longer afford to pay. She is physically present in her new life, but mentally, she is exhausted from the constant spin control. It is like she is the CEO of a failing startup, constantly pitching success to investors while knowing the bank accounts are empty. The silence in her apartment transforms from a luxury into a relentless prosecutor, demanding answers she simply does not have. She finds herself staying late at work or driving aimlessly just to avoid the confrontation of sitting still with her own thoughts. The freedom she chased is now revealed to be a vacuum. She realizes that she didn't leave to find herself. She left to escape herself, and the escape plan failed. The geography changed, but her internal architecture is exactly the same, only now it is crumbling without the structural support beams you once provided. Then, the collateral damage becomes impossible to ignore, manifesting in the confused eyes of the children. This is where the guilt metastasizes. She watches them packing bags on alternate weekends, a chaotic logistical shuffle that she invented. Every time they ask a simple question about you, it feels like a needle prick to her conscience. She realizes she has financed her vague journey of self-discovery with the hard currency of their stability. She traded their secure ecosystem for her chaotic experiment. When the youngest one cries for you at night, it isn't just a sound, it is a verdict. She tries to compensate with toys and lenient rules, bribes for forgiveness they don't even know they have the power to grant. She looks at the fragmented calendar on her fridge and sees it for what it really is, a monument to her selfishness. She claimed she wanted to model happiness for them, but she knows she is teaching them about broken promises. The echo of "I miss Dad" is the one argument her newfound freedom cannot debate. This trajectory hits rock bottom in stage 6. The reckoning. It usually happens on a mundane Tuesday, triggered by a digital artifact, a photo of you surfacing on a mutual friend's feed. She leans in, expecting to see the wreckage she left behind, but instead she sees a man who looks 10 years younger. The stress lines she spent years carving into your forehead have evaporated. She realizes with horror that she sold her shares in You Inc. right before the stock value skyrocketed. She treated you like a fixer-upper project she was too exhausted to manage, but now she is forced to watch someone else move into the fully renovated mansion. It dismantles her ego. She told herself she was the glue holding your life together, but this image proves she was actually the solvent dissolving your peace. She sees a genuine smile, not the appeasing smirk you used to give her during arguments, but a free, autonomous joy that has absolutely nothing to do with her. It is the visual proof that her departure wasn't a tragedy for you. It was a liberation. Driven by panic, she attempts the tactical retreat. She sends the text, the harmless, just thinking of you, or the logistical excuse about a forgotten box in the garage. This isn't communication. It is a sonar ping sent into the dark to see if there is still a submarine listening. She wants to verify that she still holds the remote control to your emotions. But when the screen stays dark, or worse, when the reply is polite, distant, and hours late, the truth crashes down. She realizes she is broadcasting on a dead frequency. The silence on your end is deafening. It tells her that while she has been obsessing over the past, you have been building a future that is waterproof against her influence. The brutal epiphany settles in. You didn't heal in spite of her leaving. You healed because she left. She wasn't the prize you lost. She was the toxicity leaving the system. And your current happiness is the direct result of her resignation. Finally, the dust settles, revealing stage 7, the chronic condition. The screaming panic of the early days fades into a dull, low-frequency hum of regret that she will hear for the rest of her life. It is no longer an acute injury. It is emotional arthritis, a stiffness in her soul that flares up whenever it rains or when she sees an old couple holding hands. She stops trying to explain her reasons because she realizes they were never reasons, just excuses for cowardice. She carries this mistake not like a badge of honor, but like a pebble permanently stuck in her shoe, invisible to everyone else, but making every single step she takes slightly uncomfortable. She understands now that she didn't trade a bad life for a good one. She traded a flawed, authentic diamond for a handful of glass beads that sparkled for a month and then shattered. She sits in her quiet, autonomous apartment, surrounded by the space she demanded, finally understanding that space is just another word for distance from everything that actually mattered. The ultimate irony is the complete inversion of your trajectories. She left to find something better, only to discover that the best thing she ever had was the man she walked away from. She spent her energy chasing a horizon that keeps moving away, while you spent yours deepening your roots. In the end, she didn't break you. She forged you. You found your true strength by being forced to stand alone in the wreckage she created, while she lost her identity by running away from the only mirror that reflected her true self. The ledger is closed and the math is brutal. You kept the home, the history, and the integrity. She kept the freedom. And as she sits there tonight, scrolling past your life, she realizes that freedom is a terrifyingly cold thing to hold when you have absolutely no one to share it with. She wanted to be the hero of her own story, but she ended up being just a footnote in yours, the lesson you had to learn to become the man she can no longer afford.